We talked about Jesus last week in the Old Testament. Now we're focusing on his life, particularly in the Gospels. Just yesterday, Alex went and got her driver's license, or at least she tried, okay? And she comes back out to the car. Billy's sitting outside because he took her, like a good dad would. And she says, "Dad, I've got gospel." And Billy looks at her a little bit strangely. "You've got what?" She goes, "I've got great news. I passed the test." Congratulations, Alex, by the way. Okay. The good news. Not just news. The great news. And we classify these first four books as Gospels because they are the pinnacle, if you will. Now, you can't separate them from the rest of the Bible. And if you try, if you take them out of the New Testament and leave the rest of the New Testament, you're going to have an emptiness there. But the stories, the narratives in the four Gospels is paramount, I believe. Now, I was asked this week, how are we going to cover the Gospels in one class? We're not. I have no intention of covering the four Gospels. I want you to appreciate what the Gospels are so that then you can go in and study them in detail and learn from them. There is a term that's used, and actually I'm jumping around a little bit, but there's a term that's used actually on page 37, the synoptics. That's not a term you'll find in the Bible. It's a term that we use to describe the three of the four Gospels that seem to be more like each other, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And yet, what I want to spend a majority of our remaining time this morning is to remind you of how different these four books are. That should not discourage you, but it is often used by Bible critics to remove the Bible from its importance. Well, here's the difference. I mean, for example, I highlighted this. When I'm on page 35 now. If you're going to need your lesson materials, I'm jumping all over the place here. But on page 35, middle of the page, Jesus' ministry in Galilee. If you look at those three accounts of the Gospels, and Fontenot and Emerson have been great in giving us lots of structure, I would keep this lesson available for future needs if you ever want to do some cross-referencing. But Jesus' ministry in Galilee, if you look at the very first row under that about Jesus calling men who were fishers to be fishers of men, you'll find one of those three accounts tells you that dad, Zebedee, was left in the boat. Jesus calls Peter and Andrew and James and John and he says, "Leave what you're doing and come follow me and I will make you fishers of men." I'm paraphrasing. Only one of those accounts says anything about where dad is, Zebedee. He's left in the boat. Now, you're thinking, so what, Rod? You're right. Why does one of the Gospels mention something, a trivial fact like, "And dad was left when his two sons got out of the boat to go follow Jesus"? I do not know. Oh, you have the answer, Kyle?
No, but you use the phrase "left," where I would say that Zebedee encouraged his sons.
Well, okay. You read the passage. I'm not sure it says anything about what Zebedee does. It just says he's still there. Okay, let's go to Luke. I think I read that correctly, but let's just make sure because I don't want to. No, it's not the Luke passage. Let's try the Mark passage. Mark 1. Mark 1 and verse 20. Immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with hired servants and went away to follow them. Now, I understand Kyle's point. He's not saying that they were disrespectful or inconsiderate in leaving their father. They didn't abandon him, but they stopped fishing. They stopped fishing, and they went to fish for men, being encouraged by Jesus. That's the point I'm trying to make. And the takeaway for this class specifically is The other two accounts do mention that James and John are sons of Zebedee. Okay, that's nice to know, but doesn't say anything about where Zebedee is in the picture. Was he in the boat with them? Where was he after? That sort of thing. It's just a trivial example. And then you'll find some examples like when he calls the 12 apostles. I'm a little bit, well, it's the next major category on page 35. And one gospel compares almost exactly word for word to the next one. And that's what you'd expect, right? But let me ask you this. Here's a thought question for you. If the gospels were word for word exactly the same, then what? Pardon me? Why would you have a problem? That's right, but why would you have a problem? Well, okay, remember, my premise is four books and they are word for word exactly the same. Kelly?
Well, I have a question for inspiration.
Yeah, you guys are missing my question, and maybe it's an ambiguous question. If you had four identical books, pardon me? You have one book. That's all you have. Why would God give you three books that are exactly the same? I mean exactly now. I'm talking down to the detail. Good comments, by the way, both you brothers. These are four distinct books. They're written by four different men, four different styles. Why is it Matthew gives us three chapters on the kingdom? Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Men have speculated it's because Matthew wrote primarily to Jews. Jews were looking for Messiah, who was who? Sorry, that is a vague question. Jews were looking for their king, Messiah. And so Matthew spends more time than the others. Now, I sent an email out with some detail, but I want to share something else that I read in my research. Matthew, he wanted to convince the devout Jew, this is truly the Messiah. So he spent lots of time in Old Testament prophecy. Now think about that. Matthew is a tax collector. He's a Jew who's a tax collector who is asked to leave what he's doing to become a fisher of men. And he actually writes a book, the Gospel of Matthew. But he spends his time in Old Testament prophecy. The Spirit, and we don't know all the details about this, folks. I'm not suggesting that I know that. And men speculate about these differences. But somehow the Spirit allows the style of a man, or no women wrote the books, but books were written about women. The Spirit worked with the style of the man to emphasize and demonstrate certain things. So you have his style. That's Matthew. John Mark. The Gospel of John Mark. That's the same John Mark in Acts, the 15th chapter. That Barnabas and Paul couldn't get along together because John Mark ran away during the first journey. He left them. And so when it comes time to go back on the second journey, Paul says, I'm not having it. Barnabas, your cousin, John Mark, we both know what he did. I'm not having him go with me on a missionary journey. I need somebody I can rely on. Barnabas says, oh, you missed the point, Paul. You've really missed the point. He's a good young man. I want to take him. And the disagreement between those two brethren, read your Bible, Acts 15, it says, was so great, they parted ways. Now later, as my good wife reminded me this morning, was that John Mark is the one that Paul references in 2 Timothy as saying, I need John Mark. Now either John Mark grew up, or Paul realized that maybe he misjudged the young man, whatever. This is the same man that wrote the gospel to Mark. Now here's John Mark. He motivates. Now, whereas Matthew wants to say, here's the evidence, Jews. Here's the evidence. Check it out. Mark, he wants to motivate. He wants to call you to action. And in fact, The word immediately is listed dozens of times throughout his book. Shows an urgency, and then this happened, and this happened, and this happened. Some have speculated or concluded this is a fast-paced, condensed account of Jesus' miraculous deeds. Who wrote primarily to non-Jews? Well, think about that. Non-Jews don't need to find out about what? Jewish history. They don't need Old Testament prophecy as much. Now, is it still helpful? Yes. We're not Jews, and we still spend time in the Old Testament. But the point is that he was writing, I believe he was writing, many others believe he was writing, to a little different audience. And so he emphasized it a little differently. The final result is exactly the same. I mean, the message is exactly the same. This is the Christ. This is the Messiah. He was born. He lived. He died. He was resurrected. That's the same message. But the details are different. By the way, Mark is probably the earliest of the four Gospels written. Oh, great. Mark is written before Matthew. My Bible has Matthew first and then Mark. Yeah, okay. That's not a big deal. All right? Luke. Luke is Mr. Detailed. Okay? By the way, how many chapters in the book of Mark? 16. What does it end with? The Great Commission. Go out and do. Get involved. Action. Get moving. So, again, that lends itself to this idea of it's a very concise, it's the shortest book of the four Gospels. It's the shortest Gospel. Okay, he wants to say what he needs to say, and then he wants to sit down. The book of Luke, most sophisticated, written probably to a more educated audience, and that's not a slam on the others, it just means to the educated Greeks. He wants them to get all the details, because what does he expect them to do? Once the writer, Luke, has given them all the detail, what does he expect them to do? Kelly? He expects them to sit back and objectively validate that. Don't take my word for it. I've gone in, I've done the research. O Theophilus, I've done the research. I have the information. I've gone to eyewitnesses. And oh, by the way, he was an eyewitness later, along with Paul. Book of Acts, but he's sharing, this is what I've gathered, and I have done my due diligence. Now, what do you do with it? I want you to believe. In fact, what his message is, your somebody else's words, he is providing, this is the remedy to the world's illnesses. I don't mean physical illnesses, I mean the illness of sin. Jesus was the perfect human who came to deliver humanity, and he had a unique concern for the weak, the downtrodden. Now, I'm not saying Matthew didn't. I'm just saying Matthew didn't emphasize that. Matthew's too busy writing about Old Testament poetry. Whereas Luke spends more time with Jesus and how he related to people. And then you have the book of John. And we classify the first three as synoptics because they are more similar. If you look at the detail that's on pages 35 and 36, you'll see there's some major gaps in the book of John in that far rightmost column. And it's because he just doesn't spend the time. He doesn't spend the time on what the other three writers spend time on. But then he spends effort on other aspects of Jesus, particularly being the Son of God, his miracles and that sort of thing. That's his emphasis. So others have said the book of John focuses on the deity of Christ. And you're saying, wait, you're saying the other three don't recognize Jesus as the... No, that's not what I'm saying. He focuses his writing on the deity of Christ. He provides signs that prove he's the Son of God. And so that's how four men differentiate. By the way, turn to the bottom of page 36. They start at different times. I mean, wouldn't you think four biographies would start with exactly the same at the same point of time? But they don't. Matthew begins with the genealogy. Okay, that makes sense. And then to his birth, okay? Remember, Jewish audience. Mark begins with a message about John the Baptist. Okay, well, that makes sense too, but it's not the same. Luke begins with an announcement and all the detail around John the Baptist and his parents, Zechariah and Elizabeth, even to the point, even to the detail of his name will be what? John. Why does the gospel give us the detail about the parents of John the Baptist trying to decide what John the Baptist's name is going to be? If you were just a bystander back then, what would you expected their son's name to be? Zechariah. You follow the father's name. But remember, there was a period of time where John was mute. And finally, he speaks up. He says, his name's John. Now, is that the major story in the gospel? Of course it's not. But it's so interesting that the Spirit gave that to you and me because there's some value in that. John begins when? The Gospel of John begins when? When does the Gospel of John begin? In the beginning. He takes us all the way back to Genesis, and he identifies the Word, and he identifies who that Word is, down 16, 17, those verses. He makes it very clear. By the way, Luke has a genealogy. He doesn't get to what? Is it chapter 3? Oh, by the way, here's a genealogy. I want to give it to you, but it's not exactly the same. So there are these simple and many, many differences, and they should never discourage us. Joel.
You started out talking about the gospel and saying there's one more important than any of the other books. I would argue they kind of are.
Of course it does.
And as far as the textual criticism of the accuracy, so on, you know, we have a classic. But the point is, you know, for us as Christians to be able to explain and defend our Christianity, I think you need to have a more in-depth understanding of these. Question I've been asked on multiple occasions. Why do we have different genealogies of Jesus in Matthew and Luke? If you don't understand the audience that they're writing to, that's a hard question. You don't know why. That doesn't make sense. But if you know, what about, you know, is Mark the original gospel and Matthew and Luke were copied from it? That's another common argument. You don't need to be a textual scholar. That's not what I'm arguing. I'm not at all. But we need to understand, because if these four books are true and accurate as what we have written today, doesn't prove what they wrote was true, but first of all, that's what people assault first. But then the argument and understanding of what these four men were saying.
Okay.
The whole belief system rises and falls.
Absolutely right. But I did call them the pinnacle, okay? My point a moment ago, and I want to clarify this because I certainly don't want to leave the wrong impression with you. You cannot pull the four Gospels out of the Bible and on their own have the full message that God intended. So, comment made earlier about Jim reading his Bible. Okay, he reads it. Let's say he decided, I'm going to read the four Gospels. I'm going to read them over and over and over and over and over and over. And I'm going to keep reading the four Gospels because they're about Jesus. Amen, brother. Keep reading. He hasn't studied anything about the church, the book of Acts. He hasn't studied anything about godly living, the epistles, unless you make the conclusion that, well, I see how Jesus lived, and therefore I should mirror him. I should emulate him. Well, of course. But you do need the teaching. That's my only point. So I don't think Joel and I, he's trying to pick a fight with me right now. He's Paul. I'm Barnabas. And I'm telling you, I'm right. You need to hang on to John Mark. He's a good guy. I love Joel, and he loves me, and we get along just fine. Okay, so we're out of time. Okay. You got 30 seconds. Any final comments? Anybody? So I want you to study your lesson. There's lots of gospel, lots of verses there. I want you to appreciate these are four wonderful books that fit together perfectly, but they are not the same. But they are about the same. They're about the same man. That perfect example. Back to Reagan's comment. That one individual that we do want to put up on a pinnacle. Unlike Elijah, unlike David, unlike Moses, unlike Abraham, Jesus is everything. Thank you so much for your comments.